Welcome to the Nutrition Science Podcast, where we help you cut through the noise and make informed, science-based decisions about nutrition and your health.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Nutrition Science Podcast. I am excited. I have one of my good friends, Dr. Taylor Arnold, on the show. Taylor and I met in our PhDs quite a while ago at Arizona State University. So she also has a PhD in nutrition. She also is a registered dietitian focused on pediatrics, so kids. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So we're going to be discussing kids' nutrition. This is a topic that I am not an expert in. So that's why I wanted to bring Taylor on, because she is an expert. So we're going to discuss a few things. I did a Q&A in my Instagram, and I had a few people ask questions, and a lot of the questions were centered around picky eaters. And so it seems like that's a really, really big topic that people have questions about. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking about picky eating, and then we'll discuss a few other things as well that kind of come with that in terms of the picky eating. And that's what Taylor has a lot of expertise in. So I'm really excited to have her on today to share her knowledge with you all. And thank you for coming on today, Taylor.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. I love talking about this stuff. So hopefully I'll try to not talk your ear off.
We definitely want you to. So talk okay. talk our ear off as much as you want, because I know you have pretty in-depth knowledge on this topic. So I'm excited to, because I know I'm going to learn something today as well. So I'm looking forward to this discussion. So let's get into, picky eating. Let's just jump right into it. I know this is something that all parents deal with to some degree, and kids go through their phases where they are pickier and less picky. So let's just start with the basics. Like, what are some of the main things that you start with when a parent comes to you and says, hey, my kids, has picky eating habits? Like, what are the first things that you're thinking about? What are the first questions you're asking to that parent? What does that look like for you?
So first, I want to know what else is going on in the home and with that child medically, as well as any like sensory needs, because I think there's this misconception and this is probably more prevalent in older generations, but it gets passed down. There's a misconception that picky eating is like a child being difficult, or a child trying to manipulate a parent into eating more sweets, or a child trying to be, controlling. And I think more often than not, there's other things underlying why a child is being more selective. So maybe they have something medically going on, like they have reflux, or they have constipation, or they have like food allergies, for example. Maybe they have other things, like stressful things going on in their life, like they have a new baby was born into the family, or they just switched schools, or their parents are going through a divorce, and they're trying to exert control over one of the few things that they have control over in their life, which is their eating, or they're dropping a nap, or, their sleep schedule is funky. And so I would like to ask about lots of other things, because it's rarely just like the child is just choosing to be difficult. I mean, it's almost never that. So I always want to talk to the parents about what else is going on. And then when a parent says their kid is picky, like, what does that mean? Because it means something different to different people. There's actually no standard definition in the literature of picky eating. When you read different articles, there's different definitions, and then there's different labels like picky eating or problem feeding or selective eating. And then we get into more severe, like selective eating, which would be actual diagnoses of like ARFID, which is an eating disorder, or pediatric feeding disorders, for example. So I always just like to get more details.
What does ARFID stand for?
ARFID stands for Avoidant Restrictive Food Intake Disorder, and that is an eating disorder. It's the only eating disorder that doesn't have any body image concerns, but some professionals don't like to use that diagnosis. Many believe that a more up-to-date diagnosis is a pediatric feeding disorder diagnosis, or PFD, because that takes into account other medical or functional things going on with the child that may explain their picky eating behaviors.
Okay. Okay. And so that's just extreme picky eating? Is that kind of what that entails?
So actually, I just recorded a YouTube video on this. It probably won't be out for a few more weeks, but extreme picky eating is kind of like an oversimplification of what ARFID or pediatric feeding disorder would be. So I'll give you an example. So eosinophilic esophagitis is a condition that causes inflammation in the esophagus, and it can result in vomiting, choking on the food, feeling like food is stuck in your throat, chest pain, and which can manifest as like tantrums, difficulty coming to the table because eating is uncomfortable for this kid. And so they don't want to eat. And so it can look like extreme picky eating, but there's actually something medically going on that's contributing to that behavior. So colloquially, it's extreme picky eating, but if you're seeing like a medical professional or an expert, they typically won't label it as that unless... Yeah. Like if a pediatrician labels it as extreme picky eating, I'm kind of concerned that they're not up to date with the literature.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I
No, that's why.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm definitely familiar with this though, because I have worked with lots of clients with GI issues, and people have come to me with children who had like just, you know, significant GI issues that have been ongoing, and I've, you know, seen this over and over again where they have selected themselves down to, and that they end up following like what would be recommended for them for that diet sometimes if they were like medically being recommended it, because they have just figured out how to reduce their symptoms in the best way possible just by avoiding certain foods. And that, yeah, I've seen that get, it happens in adults too, where it ends up getting really, gets down to very few foods at some point, and that becomes concerning.
So I have this theory, I just posted about it a couple of days ago, that most adult picky eaters actually have like underlying either medical diagnosis or ARFID that stems from childhood that was never diagnosed. And I think that's due to people just seeing picky eating as like normal and not needing any, like that person doesn't need any additional support. And while picky eating may be common, it's a sign oftentimes of somebody needing more support, whether it's sensory related or medical related or, you know, eating behavior related. But I don't think, I don't like when it just gets written off as like, oh, they're just picky, because it's dismissive to what that person is experiencing or what that child is experiencing.
And oftentimes they have a hard time communicating that if they're old enough to communicate it. And that's the challenge. The biggest challenge is they just start to avoid foods and start to push them away. And they have a hard time saying, I don't want to eat that because it causes me pain here when I eat that. And I think that's where the challenge is with, you know, like you mentioned, the old school parents who say you're going to eat everything on your plate, or you know, those type of statements. So can you go into a little bit of detail about that in terms of, you know, child feeding? I know I grew up with that, you know, type of mentality of like, if you get served food, you know, you're going to eat it. So what is your, you know, approach to that in terms of like meal times and talking to kids about, you know, finishing their food and having those discussions?
Yeah. So I don't recommend that parents force a child to clear their plate or even take one bite. So that could be like the no thank you bite. Some parents will be like, you have to try it one time before you can say no thank you, or you have to finish your plate. We actually have evidence in the literature that shows that kids are less likely to want to try and eat the foods that they're forced to eat. So while at that meal, your kid may get an extra bite of broccoli, in the long run, we're contributing to less broccoli eaters. And at least for me personally, I want my kid to be able to grow into an adult who can eat and explore new foods independently and confidently. And when we force our kids to try something, we take away that autonomy and that ability, or we contribute to decreasing their ability to like explore and try new foods because of that forcing makes it less appealing. So like, and I mean, anybody who has a toddler can attest, they love control. They love to control everything. like who opens the door, who puts their socks on, like who flushes the toilet. And it's the same with food. And when we take away a battle or when we take away control over what they're eating, it becomes a battle. And then mealtime becomes a negative experience. So you might have parents listening who are like, okay, well, if I don't make them take a bite, they're never going to eat it. So I think that there are ways that we can support our children to explore new foods that have nothing to do with the way we talk about it or the way we like force our kids. So we can invite them to cook with us. We can play with the food. We can do low pressure food exposures. We can look at, do they need supports in other places in their life so that they can come to the table more regulated and more ready to try those new foods. So it's less about like the rules and the talk at the table and more about the actions and how that parent is interacting with the child around the food.
Yeah. So just kind of creating that dynamic around making it a positive experience to try.
Exactly.
As opposed to like, you have to, which makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I forgot about the toddler phase when some of this,
it's you know,
I have to open the door. I have to lock it. I have to do this.
Right. And
yeah. Trying to exert control during that phase is quite difficult. So,
yeah.
So I have a question is,
okay,
how much of the anti-vegetable movement do you think is related to kids being forced to eat vegetables? So
that's a good question. I also have a theory about that. This theory is not supported by any evidence. So I will say that first. But I think a lot of the frustration and difficulty with vegetables is not knowing how to cook them, first of all. And that is coming from someone who does not know or how to or like to cook, that I do not like to cook things. I will just eat them raw because it's easier. But my husband is a chef in our family and he cooks. So I think that's part of it, is there are ways that we can like modify the vegetable, for example, like bitter vegetables like broccoli, things like sweet flavors and fatty flavors mask that bitter taste. So like, how can we add butter and cheese to the broccoli, which will maybe help your kid enjoy that food more and expose them to that food versus just like a raw head of broccoli. And I do also think that many adults have had really negative experiences with, you know, being forced to sit at the table for hours or being told like you can't have your dessert until you eat this vegetable. And I absolutely think that that's contributing to adults who are struggling with vegetables. And then if an adult is struggling with the vegetable, it's kind of hard to feed your family that vegetable if you yourself have a hard time with that. So it's definitely like a trickle down effect. And I think that adults can take my content and use it on themselves. Like, can we figure out a new way to cook this broccoli together? Even if, like, let's say I hated broccoli, preparing that broccoli is still a method of food exposure for myself. And so even if I don't eat that broccoli, that's still a great experience to me to get to the place where I can eat broccoli if that's something that I want. The difference between adults and the kids is the adult has to make a conscious decision saying, I want to be a person who likes broccoli. That's important to me. So here are the things that I'm going to do to get myself there. And that exposure, the low pressure exposure, cooking with the food is a major way that adults can do that.
That's great. Yeah. So I love that you mentioned cooking the vegetables and making them taste good. Like, that is so important. And
yep.
I think a big issue that a lot of people have, like, because I've worked with so many people who just struggle with eating vegetables, and I think it really truly does in many cases have to do with this idea of like they've been told you have to finish your vegetables, and they're
right.
being served like, you know, boiled broccoli with no seasoning or
right.
you know some
and it's like really soft and soggy and
poor texture, no taste, and working them into foods in like you mentioned, making them taste good and is really, you know, changes things. And I never got exposed to vegetables like that in terms of like in the negative way. The only time I ever started, you know, when I started eating vegetables myself, it was just adding them to my meals, and I was just adding it to your meal, and it doesn't change the taste that much. Like, you can add in various vegetables that barely change the flavor.
Right.
That's a good way to introduce things. And is that a way, like with kids, is that like, because I've seen people recommend like masking them and like blending them into the sauces and things like that. Would you recommend those tactics, or is there like, you know, kind of introducing it in the meal and talking to them about it, or hiding vegetables kind of thing? Do you think that's helpful?
That's a good question. So I am not a fan of hiding vegetables in meals, because I think it can undermine the trust between you and your child, because, you know, what that's something that you really want is a trust between you and your child around food. Like, they need to trust you that you will trust them to listen to their bodies. They need to know that you're not going to force them to eat. They need to have that trust. And I think, you know, let's say your kid like hates broccoli, and that is like, for whatever reason, the hill that you are have decided to die on. And now you are going to blend the broccoli and put it in their pasta sauce, which they love their pasta, but they see you doing that in the kitchen and you haven't told them. Now they're probably, the end result is they're probably not going to eat their pasta. So they're probably going to have lost safe food, because they're always going to question and wonder if you've put the food that they hate into that pasta sauce. And that undermines the trust between the parent and child relationship around food. So one, something that I would recommend doing instead would be to invite your child to help you prepare the pasta sauce. So let's say you're just going to do like a can of pasta sauce from the store in a blender and put some veggies in there, blend it up. It's a super easy way to add veggies to the meal. Ask your kid to come over and help you push the buttons, especially for a kid like who doesn't get to cook a lot. That is pretty dang cool. You're in charge of a blender. I mean, that's so awesome. And, you know, I wouldn't start with the broccoli. I'd start with maybe like lentils, or I don't know what other, like maybe a bell pepper, like a steamed bell pepper would be really great inside pasta sauce. And so, and maybe we can work our way up to broccoli, but now you're still masking the flavor, which can be helpful for the kid to eat the vegetable, but you're not like lying about it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's useful to mask the flavor for some kids who don't like it, because I would like that in a pasta sauce, and I would be happy if I could eat more vegetables in my pasta sauce and not taste it a ton. But I would be unhappy if someone hid something that I did not like in my pasta sauce. That would make me upset. And so I think kids are the same way. So,
yeah. Yeah. Speaking of, I made a pasta sauce that I saw on like Instagram or TikTok one time. I mean, it wasn't like necessarily pasta sauce. It was just tomatoes and veggies that you just bake and blend up. And it was so good. And my son helped me with that one too, actually. And
awesome.
Like, this is just tomatoes and veggies. And it's like, you know, you bake it and just blend it and mix it with, you know, with whatever type of pasta. And it's, you know, pretty nutritious in terms of just a bunch of veggies. Really easy way to get them in, but definitely I think that's a good point. Just talk to your kids so that you don't break that trust. Another thing, like with broccoli, for example, because a couple of the things that I did with my son, I like shaved some on top, you know, like just a very small amount, and like mixed it in so that he can taste it and say, okay, it's not that bad. And then just kind of increase the amount over time. I don't know if, you know, that's a strategy.
Yeah, it's great. And like even letting them shave it is a great idea too. Or if you have a kid who's super hesitant, I really like getting them at the kitchen counter versus the table in helping prepare it. Because oftentimes the table, there's like an expectation that this is where we eat. But at the counter where you prep the food, there's less of an expectation to eat. So I might say something like, hey, will you help me prep this? If you want to try it, you can. We have plenty of extra. And I would just, you know, keep it casual, no pressure. And sometimes I'll like look over and I'll see, you know, the kids taking like a little nibble and are like, okay. So in that low pressure environment, they might want to, you know, sample it. But like you said, shaving the broccoli is great. I think I find kids and any sort of like grown-up tools in the kitchen, they are all for. So like knife skills is one of my number one things that I recommend trying with picky eaters with a kid appropriate knife, of course. But like, when you hand them a kid safe knife and you're teaching them knife skills, which is a life skill, they're like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I have a knife and I get to cut this. And I look over and my kid's eaten half an avocado, or they've eaten an entire bell pepper and I need to go get another one from the fridge, just because they get the ownership of contributing to that prep. But knife skills is like the best thing to start with, in my opinion.
Definitely did a bunch of that as well. Speaking of broccoli, one of the ways that I got my son to eat broccoli and he started eating so much broccoli after that. He was obsessed with dinosaurs. And he was like, oh, it's like a tree. And I was like, yeah, it looks like a tree. Like, you saw the broccoli. And he was like, oh, it looks like a tree. And I was like, yeah, it's like a tree. You can be like a dinosaur and, you know, eat the tree and like a brontosaurus or whatever. And he just started eating broccoli like raw after that. He wouldn't even eat it
before. I love that.
It was like it was just a mind shift for him. And that's where sometimes people don't understand how important the relationship is. And you damage it when you're forcing your kids. And I definitely did some of that a little bit early on of like, you have to taste it, or, you know, you I want you to taste this, at least take one bite type of thing. I was definitely not super forceful with that. But I did that earlier on, and I noticed, you know, it doesn't work. You know, trying to control your kids is not usually the best long-term strategy.
Yes. I mean, because if you think about it, if you say like you have to eat it, at the end of the day, short of shoving it in their mouth, there's really no way to force them. So you're setting a rule that they have to do something that you actually don't have the power to enforce. And so you're kind of like losing that credibility, and you're engaging in a power struggle that they can absolutely win. And so it's just like a lose-lose for you as a parent and for the child, making mealtimes more stressful, which is why I don't recommend the forcing, because you're probably going to lose, or you're going to have a really tough situation on your hands, and neither of those things are a good outcome. So,
yeah. Yeah. So with picky eating, I know there's normal quote unquote picky eating. And then there's, you know, picky eating that is associated with other, you know, mental health conditions, or, you know, like OCD or ADHD. Can you talk about that? Like, what is the relationship there between, you know, those conditions and picky eating? And do those present a barrier that is, you know, that is going to be too difficult to overcome in terms of like, you know, improving those eating behaviors?
That's a really good question. So I think when we look at a kid with like neurodivergence, like ADHD or autism, or someone with OCD, like myself, for example, I have OCD and ADHD. I think it's not necessarily a barrier, but more just we need a perspective shift. Like, we need to understand how their brains are working and figure out what we can do to meet them where they're at and meet their needs related to food, knowing that their brains are different from a neurotypical person. So I actually have a course that I'm slowly trickling out on YouTube. It's called Feeding Kids with ADHD. So I'll touch on ADHD first, but there's a lot of like brain differences, for example, that make eating with ADHD hard. So like executive function is harder. So like planning ahead to, like, let's say your kid is in soccer. Let's say they're 12 and they're in soccer practice and they're like a competitive soccer player. Okay. So they need to think ahead and know before soccer practice, I need to eat something like whatever this meal is that makes me feel good, makes my body, like, fuels my body, but they may lose track of time. And now they're like rushing out the door and they have to grab something on the way because carpool's here and they didn't plan ahead. And so that planning ahead is much more challenging for a child with ADHD, or a child with medication who's on ADHD meds, which suppress hunger signals. So, you know, they may not be hungry at school lunch, but then they have a game after school. And now they're like, their performance is low. They're feeling really crappy because that planning aspect was hard. So I work on tools like timers, for example, or like calendar alerts for like a teen with ADHD. We talk about like easy to access meals. So instead of like expecting your teen with ADHD to like prep a full meal, maybe buy some like pre-prepared options, like, you know, a beef jerky stick or a cheese stick or a whole apple that they could just like grab, instead of like making an entire sandwich, which can feel like a barrier for that person with ADHD. Also, kids with ADHD and autism often have sensory difficulties. And so sensory difficulties can mean struggling with certain textures of food, smells, temperatures, appearance, that sort of thing. And it can also be related to interoception, which is understanding your body's internal signals, which would tell us that you're hungry. So you'll notice if you are an adult with autism or ADHD, or perhaps your child has these things, or maybe you're a medical professional who works with people who are neurodivergent, forgetting to eat is a really common thing in these populations. And it's oftentimes because we don't feel the hunger until we're like starving. And so again, trying to work in like a flexible schedule, grab and go meal options for these adults and kids can make life easier. And then you mentioned OCD. So OCD presents a whole host of challenges depending on what the triggers are for the OCD behaviors. So like, is it cleanliness around food? Is it a fear of vomiting, which are common with OCD? So like those things may make it hard for somebody to eat out of the house or eat at school, or like, you know, maybe they need to take so many bites of chew their food so many times before they swallow. Like that can make meals last for a really long time. So it just depends on the person and their specific like struggles. But OCD, ADHD, and autism does definitely change how I would approach feeding versus like a neurotypical kid.
When you mentioned the sensory things, I think that's interesting. Like, I feel like as a parent, you have to approach that with curiosity of like, okay, why won't you eat this? And ask more questions, because maybe you can get into more information about those sensory, you know, aversions in your kid, and help to kind of make food that from a sensory perspective is more palatable for them.
Absolutely. So, you know, common sensory aversions are like sticky, gooey, messy textures. And so like with young kids, oftentimes you'll see like hand flapping if they touch it, or excessive wiping on their shirt, or like asking for like a cloth to wipe their hands, or not liking when their face or hands are messy, which is what I noticed in my kids, which is what made me first suspect. Yeah. So, you know,
talking about that's how my son is, like, forgets to eat.
Exactly. And so it can be hard, but like noticing, like you said, we can provide support. So like maybe you're serving yogurt and you feel like that's going to be challenging. So like we can do something like provide a wet cloth at the table so that they can modify the mess themselves. And then we can also provide something fun to support them in exploring the food and making it low pressure, making the mealtime fun. So like a new spoon or sprinkles, like rainbow sprinkles on the yogurt. Like, so those are two kind of supports we can give the child. And then also when we have a kid with sensory needs, maybe we have like a sensory seeker who is like a proprioceptive or vestibular sensory seeker. Those kids tend to like movement, crashing, spinning. Maybe they're like kind of clumsy. They bump into the walls a lot. And so those types of kids may benefit from like heavy work or physical activity, or like spinning on one of those like, you know, those floors, sit and spin things, or like in an office chair before coming to the table. So like we can meet their needs to make them more regulated at the table. So like we do obstacle courses all the time before dinner, or like push my son in the swing, and that back and forth movement kind of like fills his cup. So when he comes to the table, especially if it's something new or something challenging for him, he's not already like overwhelmed, and then adding in the overwhelm of the new food. Like I'm helping to reduce his overwhelm, helping him feel regulated inside his body. So when he comes to the table, he has the capability to maybe try something new because he's not already like overstimulated and overwhelmed to begin with.
Yeah. That makes sense. And it's interesting how many other factors come into play on our eating choices. And then as we're talking about it as kids, this also applies to adults.
But so true.
We just don't like to talk about it as much. It's easier to talk about it in kids. It's like, oh, all these things are influencing their eating choices. But
yeah,
you know, same with us.
It's so true. Like, I mean, you might have an adult, like let's say you have an adult who works out a lot and has a stressful job. Maybe one day they missed their workout because they had to go in the office early, and then they had back-to-back meetings and they were really stressful. So then they come to the table, like that's an adult who may be overstimulated and hasn't had their sensory or emotional needs met for the day. And so that grown-up may have a harder time being presented with a new to them food or food that they don't love. Or if they're cooking, they may just tend to gravitate towards comfort foods. Like for me, if I've had a stressful day, like I want a pizza. I want to eat pizza for dinner, or I want to eat like popcorn as my bedtime snack, because those are like my comfort foods, foods I really like. But if my husband, if I had a stressful day and it's like, you know, I don't like marinara sauce really. So if he made like pasta bolognese, I would be like I'll eat it because I don't want to cook my own dinner, but it's not like the thing that really makes me feel excited to eat. And so adults have these same things going on, but maybe we're just less likely to throw a tantrum than a child.
Yeah. The emotional aspect of food, it really does, you know, it can help calm, like it, having a good meal after a stressful day can be something that's, you know, really calming and enjoyable and can help regulate your emotions quite a bit.
For sure. Absolutely.
The next thing I want to discuss, in because this is also something that I think is just really common that a lot of parents struggle with, is how do we strike the balance of, you know, talking to our kids about healthy eating and prioritizing healthy eating, but also not demonizing, you know, processed foods and but including them in a way that, to the degree that it's not, you know, unhealthy. So I have questions on both sides of like, how do I, like, can I include any processed foods? And then the other side of like, you know, how do I get kids to eat, you know, more of these healthier foods? And how do we have this conversation in getting them to like want to do it? So like, can we talk about like, how do we have these discussions with our kids in a positive way? And then in terms of like the processed foods, like at what point is it going to be potentially harmful to their health to be including, you know, chips and Cheetos and Gatorade and these cakes and cookies and these type of things that a lot of parents are really worried about?
Right. Okay. So let's do the discussion first, and then we'll talk about processed foods. Is that okay? We'll divide this, divide and conquer. Okay. So the first part, the discussion, I think when I hear a parent say like, how do I talk to my kid about protein, for example, to like get them to eat more protein? Talking to our kids about food, in my opinion, should never be to get a child to eat, because one, especially young children, they're not logical. I mean, explaining it to a toddler would be like, it's very important that you go to bed at 7 o'clock because your body needs rest. My toddler degaffs about that. He wants to stay up. He doesn't care that his body needs rest. Like, that's not going to make him go to sleep. So I'll give him other supports. Like, I will lay with him, or I'll give him a stuffed animal or white and whatever, environmental supports to help him go to sleep. The same with eating. If we want our child to eat more protein, if we feel like they need more protein, for example, or fats, usually protein is fine in a child's diet. So let's say fats, for example. It's about cooking with them, exposing them to the food, modeling yourself about those foods, watching the way you talk about food so you're not demonizing the food, playing with the food, introducing them to the food, all your tools to help your child accept and explore that food. That's how we help them add that food to their diet, not just talking to them, because talk is cheap when it comes to kids and nutrition. And I don't like, I'm not against talking to kids about what food does in their body, but especially for younger kids, I prefer that to be a curiosity that comes from them and you answer those questions honestly and truthfully. So like my daughter would ask about broccoli, like, why are we eating broccoli? What happens to it? And so I'd talk about like, oh, you know, the fiber helps you poop. And which, you know, any talk about poop and farts, they like love related to food and fiber. So that's like a major win. You know, the vitamin K inside the broccoli helps your body make a scab when you get a cut. And all of those are like truthful, straightforward, age-appropriate things for a five-year-old, for example. But none of that is to like get her to eat the broccoli. If I want her to include broccoli in her diet, I'm going to do things like cooking, playing, pretending to be a dinosaur, those sorts of things. And then when our kids get older, oh, sorry, I interrupted. Or go ahead. What were you going to say?
That's a good point, because, you know, I think about, you know, oh yeah, I would answer this differently myself. I would say, yeah, like, we want to teach them, but the stuff that you just said, like the broccoli, the vitamin K that makes a scab, that's the stuff that I did with my son, but I have a PhD in nutrition and not everyone does.
Yep.
And so as I'm hearing you say that, I'm like, Yeah, that's great, but not everyone's going to be able to make those connections and talk about food in that way like you and I probably do with our kids. So that's where, you know, all of the other things are going to be important. And if you do want to like educate around some things and say, yeah, protein is good for your muscles, and but I get completely what you're saying there in terms of like, we're not trying to, we want to educate our kids about nutrition instead of trying to use, you know, this is why you need to eat healthy type.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think it's great. Like, we want to teach our kids about their bodies. I mean, we teach our kids about body parts, and we teach our kids about how to communicate to us when, how, about how they're feeling when they're sick. Like, we should absolutely teach our kids what food does in our body. Now, do I think we should sit our two-year-old down and talk to them about the importance of protein so that they feel full? No. I mean, like, you know, I don't think that's age appropriate, but like, do we have a 10-year-old, for example, who is an athlete, and talking to them about like water and, you know, carbohydrates during, you know, 1 hour plus intensive exercise sessions, that's appropriate. And, you know, we don't have to use it in like this way, like we demonize things. We can just say like, hey, you're, you know, in your basketball camp, you know, you're going for 3 hours. Your muscles need additional fuel and your brain needs additional fuel. So here are some options for you that supports your body during basketball camp. Let's choose from here. And that's like a very neutral way. You're teaching them about what the food does in their body, but you're not saying like you can't have Cheetos during basketball camp because that's not good for you. You're saying, here's what your body needs. Here's some options. And you're giving them the autonomy. And as they get older, we've modeled that for them. You may be expanding their options. You may be going more in detail into the science. And then eventually you're going to have a teenager who understands what they need and knows how to make those choices on their own.
I love it. Yeah, a lot of adults need some help with this as well. And that's why, that's why we do what we do, is teaching about nutrition, because unfortunately these things aren't included in like a curriculum, so we get exposed to a lot of misleading information sometimes when we try to go find it on our own. So speaking of misleading information, let's go into the processed food discussion just a little bit, because I've talked about processed food. I have a whole episode on that, but I want to talk specifically about with relation to kids, because I know a lot of parents are just really worried about ingredients that are in kids' foods and things like that. And a lot of parents get really, really caught up on, you know, the exposures that kids might be having to various types of foods. Like, can we discuss that a little bit? Like, what?
Sure.
Is there some overarching, you know, guidance that you would have recommend there?
Yes. So the first thing I want to do is just like a perspective check. So, you know, we're raising our kids, and what do we want the end goal to be with related to food? Like, do you want to raise a teenager who's never touched a piece of processed food? Or do you want to raise a child who knows how to regulate around those foods and how to make appropriate selections for what their body needs? Most parents, I think, will say the latter. And the fact of the matter is we, our kids are being raised in a world with lots of processed foods. And they will get exposed to it at some point. And if we don't, you know, support them in having a balanced diet in the home and understanding how to have a balanced diet while including the foods that they like, they're going to graduate and go off to college or leave the house or go to their first job without having that knowledge. And I think that is not what most parents want. So when it comes to processed foods, a couple things I encourage parents to think of is, just because it's processed doesn't mean it's nutrient poor. I mean, things like frozen fruits and canned vegetables, those are processed, or like, you know, chickpea based snacks, those are processed, but like those can be a great source of fiber and protein for a child who maybe struggles with other sources of fiber and protein. So they're all I think all of these things we can include in a balanced diet for a child. And I think we can make, you know, simple swaps, like perhaps when it comes to, you talk a lot about processed meat. So like choosing deli meats that don't have nitrates or nitrites added, like we're still offering those options to our child, but we're offering maybe ones that have a lower risk associated with it. But that doesn't mean, again, that like I would never let my kid eat a pepperoni pizza or a salami sandwich, but I ultimately, at the end of the day, it's our job as parents to provide our child with a well-rounded and balanced diet. And then it's a child's job to decide what to eat from that. So when it comes to processed foods, I say sometimes offer it, sometimes don't. You have to take like a step back and look at your child's overall diet and see if it's appropriate to offer more, if it's appropriate to offer less, and also look at their behaviors. So are they becoming obsessive and fixated around Cheetos, for example? And if they are, perhaps we need to give them a little more freedom around that food so we don't create this idea that it's like a, like, what word am I'm looking for here?
Like forbidden.
It's an off-limits thing. Yeah, forbidden food. Yeah, we're going to create like this forbidden food mentality around the Cheetos, and it's going to make it more appealing to them. But maybe we serve the Cheetos, but we also serve it beside cucumbers and ranch, which your kid loves ranch. So now we're, you know, helping them to explore the cucumbers. We're going to have like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with whole grain bread. So we're providing a balanced meal here with the things that they also like and allowing them to explore those processed foods in a way that's not just like you have free reign of everything, whatever you want, whenever you want, but also in a way that's not like, I'm going to control every bite that you take. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. And I definitely went wrong here early on, and I saw the consequences of this. So I think this will be helpful for people to hear, because I was really, I barely gave, like, my son probably didn't have a Cheeto before he was like, you know, for, you know, when it comes to like ultra processed foods, like the Cheetos, the spicy chips, all that stuff, I just didn't keep it around at all. He never saw it, didn't know what these things were really. And then once he starts getting into like school age and around more kids and around more friends, he gets like interested in it, goes to birthday parties. And I started to realize like at birthday parties, he would go crazy and like be like miserable after, like would the stomach would hurt, but he could not stop eating. Like when we'd be at a birthday party, he would just like another bag of chips, another bag of chips, another, you know, all the stuff that would normally I just do not keep around. He would never eat. He would go just a little crazy on. And I noticed that, and I was like, okay, I probably need to just make these things more available and on a regular basis. And now like, you know, he has his chips, and I keep that stuff here, but as you mentioned, he's 10 now, and he does a really good job of choosing like good options, even when I allow him complete freedom. And I think that was me recognizing this when he was about, it was probably like 5 or 6 that I realized, like every time we went to a party, any type of birthday party, he would just go crazy. Like it would be like he never had the foods before, and they're very appealing. And when you taste them And I think that happens quite often, but if it happens to a kid in their teen years when they have more freedom to be able to really go and buy those foods, and it can become a real problem. And I've heard that before from people who grew up in those type of homes where into their teen years, they started to, you know, go and buy a bunch of food and binge on it when they weren't in the home, and then get home and you know, pretend like they're just eating the normal dinners with their family. And you definitely don't want to create those type of relationships, because that's about as damaging as it can get in terms of like we all have to eat, and that relationship is going to be there your entire life. And to have that type of really, you know, up and down relationship with food, with the thing that is, you know, that is going to nourish you and keep you alive and provide you with, you know, all of the nutrition that your body needs for the rest of your life. Like that should be a positive relationship that you have with food overall.
Yeah. And when, you know, if you have people listening who maybe have teens or like older kids and are like, okay, well, we're there now. Like my kid is obsessed with Cheetos or Oreos or whatever. I feel like it's a lost cause. I just want to extend some encouragement that it is never too late. You can be a grown up and still work on these things. Well, yes, I also want to recognize and validate it is harder with a teenager because there's more autonomy. They have more autonomy over their food choices, and maybe they have money and a job and a car, and they can go to the store and buy stuff, versus like my 4-year-old does not have that option, but it's still possible. And, you know, a lot of Instagram advice to help kids like explore new foods is like the dinosaur thing, what you said. It's more tailored towards younger crowds. And so when it comes to older kids, like really leaning into that cooking with them, like if you have, you know, the expectation that your child cleans their room and does their laundry, like having the expectation that you participate in preparing family meals together, I think is really important, because not only is that going to help with their relationship with food, but you're also helping them build life skills. Like they're going to leave the house knowing how to make a meal. Like I didn't know how to boil water. Like I didn't, when I went to college, I didn't even know how to boil water. And so look at me now. I don't like cooking and I don't do any of the cooking. But so, you know, I think there's definitely something to be said about cooking with your kids. It's really powerful. Even if it's something like muffins from a pre-made mix, or like, you know, how to like cook a chicken breast. Like those are simple skills that can be really useful to a child, and I think important for a teenager. And that's going to be a big way to help a teen expand their diet and expose them to new foods.
And if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I don't know how to cook a chicken breast, well, that can be something that you and your teenager do together and learn together.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
A great bonding experience, because that is yes. The case oftentimes. And that is a big barrier to eating healthy, is, you know, not having those skills. And because it's just harder if you don't have the skills, and giving your children those skills when they're young is invaluable, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can even go as simple as like going to Trader Joe's and picking a frozen protein and a frozen veggie and figuring out like, and heating them up together. Like it doesn't, you don't have to be a chef to create balanced meals. Like you can go uber simple with that, or like how to make scrambled eggs and into an omelet. Like, you know, super simple.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, most of my meals look like that because it's just easier to make it that way. And I can cook. I've been cooking for quite a while, and I will cook, you know, more elaborate meals most of, you know, some of the time. But most of the time, my meals are just like what you said, like the frozen veggies and pre-made chicken or something that I prepped beforehand. So those are easy things to put together and teach your kids how to just fend for themselves when they need
to eat. They're going to do it eventually.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. I know we have been chatting for quite some time, so I want to go ahead and close out the episode, but I want to tell my listeners where they can find more information. And I want, before you mention this, if you're listening to this and you found some value from this, like Taylor has more free resources than pretty much anyone I've ever seen on like in nutrition. So like I highly recommend going to her website and everything that she's about to share, because she has free courses and just such great educational information about all of this stuff. It's really impressive how much you put out.
Thank you. So I do have courses. I make all of my courses free. It's not like a mini course and then there's a different course later. Like it's all 100% free on my YouTube. I have a course for feeding your baby, like how to introduce solids. I have, like, for picky eaters, it's called Variety 101. It's also just for parents who don't consider their kids picky, but they just want to help introduce more foods. I have a course called Growing Intuitive Eaters 101, how to raise kids with a healthy relationship with food. I have a course that's in progress called Feeding Kids with ADHD. I also have mini courses on constipation, on transitioning your baby from formula or breast milk to whatever milk that you choose. And then I have just lots of other videos on YouTube and my Instagram. So, and TikTok. My Instagram is growing.intuitive.eaters. And my YouTube, which is where you'll find the bulk of my video content and free courses, is Growing Intuitive Eaters. I also have a website that's launching next month. I'm so excited. It's just growingintuitiveeaters.com. And you'll be able to find blog posts and all of my video content there. But yeah, I make it my mission to offer everything 100% free. So ebooks, courses, it's all available, because I really, you know, we all have to feed our kids. So I want to make this available to as many parents as I can.
Well, thank you so much. And like I said, I can't recommend it enough. I've gone through some of your stuff and I'm like, how does she put out all of this free information? So really great job. I appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a great day.
Thanks for having me.